doing, Met fans? And welcome to another edition of the Terry Collins Show, presented by Tunnel to Towers, supporting America's greatest heroes. Donate just $11 per month by going to T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. I'm John Arezzi, and joining me from his home in Florida on this very special edition of our show is the former skipper of the New York Mets, analyst for SNY's Baseball Night in New York, Terry Collins. Terry, how you doing?
I'm doing great, John. It's good to have it back, be back on the air again. We're going to have a lot of fun today on our show. I've been looking forward to it for a week.
Today will be a great show for sure. You were able to get Carlos Mendoza to come on with us a few weeks back. We had Buck Showalter, which was great. But today we get to talk to the current Mets manager in his first year managing. So, Terry, what do you think? We get right to it?
Yeah, I think we should get right to it because I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes. All right. So, Terry, let's get right into the Talking with TC segment and bring on our special guest. Now it's time for a special Talking with TC. Prior to becoming the 24th manager of the Mets, Carlos Mendoza's journey into managing in professional baseball was over 25 years in the making. From 1997 to 2009, he played in the minor league systems of the Giants and the Yankees as an infielder. In 2010, he started his coaching career with the Yankees in the minor league system and quality control before being named to the team's major league coaching staff in 2017 as an infield coach. And in 2020, Mendoza was named Yankees manager Aaron Boone's bench coach, a position he held until being named the Mets manager prior to the 2024 season. In his rookie season as Mets manager, Carlos currently has led his competitive squad to a place in the National League where they are a very serious playoff contender. It's our pleasure to bring on the manager of the New York Mets, Carlos Mendoza. Welcome to Talking to TC, Carlos.
Thanks for having me. What an honor. It's really a pleasure to be here and getting the opportunity to talk to TC and see if I can learn something here.
Well, thanks for coming on, Carlos. And I will tell you, you're doing just fine. And if you do what I did, I used to use all those guys that I became friends with. I used to call Jim Leland a lot. I called La Russa. Of course, I was in New York at the end of Joe Torre's run and with the Yankees. And so Joe used to come in the clubhouse and I didn't want him to leave. I spent so much time talking to him about managing and about what it was, especially in New York and dealing with the media in New York, all those things that you and I went through. And I will tell you, those guys were really special. And I hope you've got those mentors that you have called along the way to help you out.
Yeah, I do. And they definitely help. You've been a huge help. I really appreciate it when you reach out. I think it was somewhere late in May when it was hard for us. It was rough. And you reaching out and having the opportunity to talk to you meant a lot. I reach out to guys like Dusty Baker a lot. We have a really good relationship. I consider him not only a friend, but a really good mentor. So especially when things gets a little tough, having the ability to lean on guys like that, is always important. Lee Mazzilli, who I have a really good relationship with. I know I'm forgetting a lot of names here, but it's just always really good to have that support from guys that have been in this chair before.
Well, Carlos, obviously, it's been an up and down season for you, which it is for everybody. It seems like I don't think there's any one team that has an easy cruise through the season. Maybe go back when the Yankees won 116 that one year, might have been a cruise for Joe Torre and those guys. But for the most part, every manager goes through those ups and down times. And so how have they been? How have they affected your, the way you've gone about things?
Yeah, look, as expected, man, like you said, 162, you're going to go through some ups and downs. And here in New York, man, like even when you're playing well, you mentioned a team, the Yankees, when they won 116. I remember my first year as a coach, 2018 in the big leagues. We won 100 games and it felt like we lost 100 because Boston won 108. They ended up winning the division and then we lost in the division series. And it was like the world was coming to an end. But, I learned my lesson right away. Like, we won 100 games, but it didn't feel that way. Looking back now, I didn't enjoy it at the time, because, the the Rivers were, you know, they won the division. And but anyway, back to this year. Yeah, it was hard at the beginning, not a secret. Everybody saw it, especially the month of May. But we stayed positive, man. Like, I knew what I had in that locker room. And, you know, the coaching staff was great. Having guys like John Gibbons, Mike Sarbaugh, Glenn Sherlock, and those guys that had plenty of experience, you know, they were right there with me, the hitting coaches, the pitching coach, Hef. I mean, I got to give them credit, because without them, I don't know what would happen, you know. Because, and then the players, obviously, you know, a lot of experience in that room, and they never panicked. They kept working. They held each other accountable. You know, everybody talk about that big meeting that Lindor called, and, you know, you got to give them credit, because it wasn't easy, but they kept pushing each other. They had each other's back, and here we are. You know, we added some pieces, and now what we're seeing is a group of guys that not only coming to the ballpark every day with the mindset of, okay, let's prepare. But they're going to go out there, they're going to compete, and they're going to have fun. And that's a good thing that we got going here.
You know, Carlos, obviously, you know, I've always thought, you know, when things are going good, it's, you know, it's easy when you come to the ballpark. But what do you think that your team went through in the first 100 games of this year that's really going to make a difference in the last 60 games of this year? When all of a sudden it's crunch time, that last 2 months when everybody's starting to get tired, what did those guys learn about themselves in that first, you know, 100 games that there's going to take you over the top in the last two months?
Yeah, that's a relentless group there. And, you know, we're going to get knocked down, but we're going to get back up quick. You know, like, we're going to be facing adversity, but we're not going to shy away from, you know, we're going to face it, we're going to embrace it, and we're going to keep moving forward. And that's what we learned, because we went through it and we shone. It happens. You know, you're going to go through some stretches where it's hard. But, man, there's a lot of character there. They care. They push each other. And at the end of the day, they have fun. And they believe. And that's huge. They believe that we can go out there in any given night and get a W, you know? So, yeah, a special group, but we also understand we got ways to go.
So, Carlos, tell us, I think one of the, obviously it's been talked about by many people, but one of the biggest things that happened all to this club would turn around was your decision to move Lindor in the leadoff spot and move Nimmo down. So how'd that thought process come about to make that kind of a move?
Yeah, it came when we were struggling. We were struggling offensively. We were having a hard time scoring runs and putting rally together. And I just, you know, started, how can I give this lineup a different look, a different dynamics? And I remember, I think we were in Miami on the way back to the hotel after a tough loss. I was sitting right next to Lindor, and we were having that conversation. I was like, man, like, how do you feel about leading off? So I just put it there for him. It's like, man, you know what? When I first came up to the big leagues with Cleveland, I hit leadoff. And my mindset was, I need to set the table for the big boys. I need to get on base. I need to steal bases. I need to create traffic. I was like, what do you think about if we do something like this here? It's like, whatever you feel like is best for the team, I'm open. The one thing he asked, and all of them since the beginning, you always want some type of consistency. And in this case, his routine was going to be different, because now, especially with the clock and all that, like, you got to go out there a little earlier and prepare for that first at bat of the game, you know? So routine was a little different, but he wanted a little bit of consistency. But not only I needed to talk to Lindor, there were some other players that I needed to be moving around. In this case was Nimmo, who was the leadoff guy for the past couple of years, the on-base machine, obviously. But, you know, I needed to talk to Brandon. And again, he's such a professional, and the willingness to do whatever it takes to put the team in a better position, they're up for it. You know, we saw it in the offseason when we talked to him, and we moved him to left field because we signed Bader. He was all up for the, you know, for it, to help the team. And it made my decision, after talking to those two, it was an easier decision. We went with it, and I'm glad it worked, you know, because Lindor, obviously, we knew, you know, great player. You know, this is a potential Hall of Famer here that we're watching play day in and day out. Nemo, same way. What a great player. So at the end of the day, we knew that the numbers were going to be there, but it kind of clicked, and here we are.
You know, Carlos, one of the things that's also happened, you know, a lot of people, and ever since Alvarez came back from being hurt, everybody said, what a difference he's making. We'll get at that in a minute. But I always thought one of the biggest things that happened was the addition of J.D. Martinez. Tell me what kind of an impact he's made in that clubhouse and on that field.
Yeah, huge. We all know the type of hitter in, you know, his career speak for himself, right? But just a different mindset, the preparation, and the different ideas. And, you know, you got to give credit not only to JD, but to the hitting coaches, because, you know, they got on the same page, and, you know, we're seeing, you know, the results now. It's not easy when a guy like JD comes in that he's got his own ideas and, you know, a different philosophy, you know, that works for him. But how can we apply some of the things that he does, you know, approach-wise, the mindset, his ability to make adjustments. And, you know, the hitting coaches, they presented some of our ideas to JD, and they kind of, you know, were able to work together and then just presented to our group and our hitters meetings, our conversations in the dugout after an at-bat, after every pitch. It's been great. So JD, man, like we didn't see him at all in spring training. We signed him late. Then we broke camp and we didn't see him till like, you know, I don't know, late April, second week of May. I can't even remember. It seems too long ago. But once he came on board, like he's been great, man. And yeah, excited to have him. And yeah, he's a dangerous hitter in the middle of our lineup.
Yeah, I know. One of the things that I read about was, you know, this where he holds everybody accountable for their at-bats, And I thought that was a great idea that he had. Hey, look, let's talk about each and every at-bat, because obviously it changes the mindset of every hitter. You know, I go back years ago when I had Jeff Bagwell, who when he was MVP 1 year, this guy took every at-bat like it's maybe the last at-bat of the season. And I thought the impact that JD made on the mindset of some of those guys was a big factor.
And we're seeing the same thing here, you know, in just holding people accountable, not only on the in the game, but the way they prepare, you know, like the preparation, like going over scouting reports and how we're going to attack different pitchers, different bullpens, has been, you know, and you got to give credit to the hitting coaches. You know, JD has been a huge part, but the hitting coaches obviously are the ones leading the whole thing. And at the end of the day, we got good players, so that makes things a little bit easier as well.
You know, Carlos, I thought one of the biggest things you did when you got named the manager, you know, I go back 2 years ago, I looked at the job when, you know, when the Mets won 101 games, I looked at the job that Chavy did as when he was the hitting coach under Buck. And I thought, you know, in the next year they made him the bench coach, and I couldn't understand. I thought, you know, gosh, you have a hitting coach that's made a huge impact with this team. And they bought into what he believes in and what he thinks about. And they won 101 games. And the next year, you know, they get to bring in a new hitting coach. I was shocked by that. And I thought one of the best moves you made was, hey, put Chavy back to where he can make a huge impact. So I think that was a great move by you.
Yeah, no, and look, and you got to give him credit, because he was a hitting coach, got the bench coach position, and now we're putting him back, you know, and he's been great. Jeremy Barnes has been great. They complement each other really, really well. So, yeah, they created something really good. And, you know, we're going to go back to the 2022 year when they were a really, really good team. And then Chavy was a big part of it. Barnes, he was here as his assistant as well. So we decided, you know what, let's put these guys together again and see how it goes. And, you know, we're seeing really good results now.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, everybody realizes, you know, your lineup is deep. It looks, it's what an impact, but what an impact Vientos has made since he's been back up. And I know, Carlos, this is your first experience with him, but what differences do you see now that you did not see in spring training with him?
Well, look, I mean, he's a more mature hitter, even though he's so young and playing for the first time every day at the big league level. But his ability to make adjustments, you know, I see a guy now that with runners in scoring position, he's not afraid to go the other way. He's not afraid to stay short and try to put the ball in play, you know, just create something. And when he touches it, he hits it, man. Like, you know, like the power is real. So I think the biggest thing that I've seen the past month or so, he's comfortable. He's and his ability to make adjustment as the league is adjusting to him, you know, because you know how it is in this level. There's a lot of information, but people will make adjustments here, and you got to have that ability. And he's shown that, he's done that, and you got to give him credit because he's worked really hard. He went through a lot, especially at the beginning of the year, spring training, came into spring training thinking that he was going to make the team, got sent back down, came back up, hits a walk-off homer. He's back in AAA the next day. Like, that's not easy to handle. And to his credit, put his head down, went back to AAA, continued to work, finally got his opportunity, and he went with it. And he's been huge, and huge part of what we've done here as of late, because like you said, our lineup is so much deeper with him there.
You know, I always love those guys, Carlos, those guys that, you know, take adversity and make and say, hey, look, I'm going to show you, you made a mistake. I love those guys because they come back with a passion, man. You know what I mean?
100%. I'm going to prove you guys you're wrong. You know, I belong here on a respectful way, you know, and that's what you Absolutely. Want out of your guys. And I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I did too. I thought it was, I think it's great. But we all know the game's about pitching. And man, if you had, we talk about ups and downs, that has got to be some kind of struggle with what you've been through. You know, you're with the first starting off with Senga getting hurt early, and you trying to piece the starting staff together, and then your bullpen with, you know, been up and down. And I'll tell you one thing, you've hung in there, and I credit the job you and Hef have done to keep that entire pitching staff positive, because it could have got away from you early.
Yeah, and you're right. You know, you got to give a lot of people credit. Obviously, it comes down to players executing and staying positive, even when it was hard. You know, the month of May, not a secret, especially our bullpen. Diaz struggled, then he went down with an injury, and some of the other guys struggled. And, you know, they kept fighting. They kept finding a way to how can we get better. We stayed positive. You got to give credit to Jeremy Hefner, because he was right there with them, you know, and that's our job as coaches. And in my position, like, we have to be there for those guys. We have to stay positive. You got to continue to run them back out there because that's the only way they're going to get through it. They got to find a way. And, you know, we went through a lot. We lost a few guys. Brooks Raley went down early in the year. That was a huge blow. Drew Smith went down. Some of the other guys struggled. And it wasn't easy, you know. It wasn't easy. But got to give credit to a lot of people. Obviously, a lot of players came from player development, which they're doing a hell of a job, you know, continue to provide that depth that you need to get through 162-plus. You look at our bullpen now, and it's a lot of different names, guys that weren't even in big league camp. And they're getting big opportunities. They're, you know, whether it's high leverage, low leverage, medium leverage, and that's what makes this game such a beautiful game. So here we are, and we got to keep going.
Yeah, you know, Carlos, that's the one thing people don't understand. Everybody thinks it's easy to run a bullpen. Hey, look, you know, those guys are out there for a reason. And once in a while, this is what you got. There are times when, hey, certain guys might need a night off, and you're going to say, hey, look, this is the guy who's supposed to pitch in these situations, and you know what? They got to get it done. And so I always thought that, you know, the fact that confidence that they, when you put him in those roles, that to me should send a message to the player. Hey, listen, I believe in you. Mm-hmm. Or I wouldn't put you in this game. And I know some guys run away from it. Some guys don't like it. You know, some guys like that, hey, put me in when we're four behind, and I'll keep you four behind. But they don't do, when it's tied or we're up a run or down a run, you know, that extra pressure. But, you know, your confidence in those guys in that bullpen, I think I've seen a huge difference in the way they've approached it. And, yeah, I mean, it's a good thing you guys have names on your back so you know who's out there anymore, because you've made so many changes. Like, I don't even know if you know all those guys.
Look, as I'm sitting here, like, we just got a couple of new guys there, and that's part of the challenge, you know, like, you don't know how they're going to respond after a back-to-back, you know, are they able to go back-to-back, right. And if they do it, how many days are they're going to be down, can they come in and give you multiple innings, can they come in with traffic, like, those are some of the things, especially when guys that you didn't have in spring training, or you didn't have in AAA, like, that's where, you know, a lot of conversations, but talking to players. And then at the end of the day, You give them the ball and you'll find out. So, we've done that and we will continue to do it. You know, guys will continue to step up. Guys will continue to get opportunities and we'll roll with it.
Listen, I know this is a big couple days for you. The trading deadline's coming up. Here you are right in the hunt now. And everybody keeps talking about wild card, you know, and I'll tell you what, there was times, you know, even my last couple of years where, you know, everybody talked about wild card. Hey, listen, I went out to win. I went out to win this thing. And you guys have made such a huge run and you've got 55 left or 56 left, whatever it might be. You know, don't count those out. You go out and get hot like you did in the month of June, you could end up any place. So how important do you think because I'm going to ask this question, Carlos, because 1 year in Anaheim at the trading deadline, we were likely, we might even have been either in first or tied for first in the American League West in Anaheim. When the players were dying to make a deal and we didn't make it. And that really impacted our team because they were really upset about that. How do you think in the next 2 days is going to impact your team, whether you guys make a big deal or you don't make a big deal?
Look, you got to give the guys credit again because we put ourselves in a better position. But we also understand that, you know, we got to this point with what we have there. And we feel really, really good with what we got in that room. We already made some move. And I'm going to go back to when we got Louis Torrens, when Jose Iglesias came on. Those were two huge additions. And they're, you know, a big part of what we are where we are now. And then the Phil Maton, Ryan Stanek. So we already make some really good additions that are already impacting this ball club. So the conversation that I'm having these days, because there's a lot of noise and there's always rumor. At the end of the day, we gotta control the things that we need to control, which is we come to the ballpark with the mindset that we're going to prepare, we're going to hold each other accountable, and then we're going to go out there, we're going to compete, and we're going to have fun. Whatever happens after the trade deadline, happen, and we're going to roll with it. Because I do like our ball club. We like our guys, what we got going. And, you know, if something happens, great. If not, I'm good with what we got here. So just kind of get things simple. The mindset of let's take care of business. Let's worry about today's game. Let's do whatever we need to do to win this baseball game today. And then,
yeah, you know, last year, I was asked to be a consultant with the Miami Marlins. Kim Eng was a longtime friend of mine when she took over as the GM in Miami a couple of years ago. She asked me to come on board, and I kind of hesitated till last year. And then last spring, I saw a guy named Jose Iglesias that they signed to come in to be a possible backup player in the infield. He didn't make the club. They sent him down and kind of kept him in spring, that, you know, extended spring, and they ended up letting him go. What an impact this guy's energy has brought to your club this year.
Unbelievable. I don't think you can measure that. You know, as soon as that guy walked through those doors, it was a different vibe. It was a different feeling. And not only because of the presence, but then when he started playing, the energy, the way he played the game, he plays the game the right way. He runs every ball out. He puts the ball in play. He makes big plays. He seems like he's always in the right position. And he's just having fun with some of the other guys. And everybody fed off that. You know, I'm watching this guy that, look, he's been in the big leagues for 10 years, went back down to AAA, didn't have a job the year before, and he continued to fight. And here he is playing like he said it when he first got called up. Man, I think this was the impact that he had. I think it was better than when I first got called up to the big leagues because he had to work really, really hard to get back to this level. And he's been nothing but a great, unbelievable guy. What a human. He wants to win. And that's what I keep saying. I like what I got in that room.
Oh, that's great. So, John, I know you've got some questions for Carlos.
Yeah, and actually this first question is going to be for both of you. We're in an exciting season right now. Everybody knows it, and Terry, you experienced that in 2015. The Mets lost their first 5 games of the season. The low point came when the team fell to 22-33 on May 29th. And by the All-Star break, they turned it around. All those things that you were talking about, all those pieces that were added, the excitement generated, the team clicked. And the Mets are right in the hunt, not just for the wild card, but there's 9 games behind the Philadelphia Phillies right now, which is crazy. But one thing that kind of I'm seeing some similarities between the 2015 Mets and the current Mets. It's like something clicks, Citi Field erupts, the fan base goes crazy, it becomes a party atmosphere. And you both now have been there. Terry, you tasted it. Carlos, you're experiencing it right now. So kind of give us that, wow, this place has kind of turned into kind of a party place. And Terry, you experienced the same thing. So talk to us about how important that fan support can be to motivate a team and keep that momentum going.
You want me to go?
Please. Well, go ahead.
They're a huge part of what we're doing here. I'm not going to lie. Players will feed off that. I feel off that. You know, we could feel it in the dugout. I'm going to go back to, not too long ago, that Senga game that, we score. I don't know how many runs against the Braves. That ballpark that night, it felt like a playoff game. You know, it was electric. It was loud. And we felt it. And I'm like, wow, this place is unbelievable. So, you know, the fan base, they mean a lot to us. And they support. We feel when they're right behind us. And we also feel their pain when we're not playing well. And rightfully so. And that's what makes New York and the New York Mets, the fan base, such a special fan base, because they're right there with you. They're gonna cheer. They're gonna push you. But they're also gonna let you know when you're not playing well, and that's what you want. So credit to them, and they gotta continue to come to Citi Field and just be right there with us because we feel it.
You know, again, and Carlos is right, John. I mean, the passion the Mets fans have. You know, they're always being accused of the lovable loser kind of, you know, hey, look, if something's going to happen, it's going to happen to the Mets. But you know what? Those great fans that have endured that, they enjoy it when things are good. And, you know, I was there when the start of the Seven Line Army started out. And their passion, when you'd have that huge group of, you know, orange shirts, whether it be in center field or Citi Field. We played the Yankees one time when one of the first years that they established at Yankee Stadium, they took an entire section, half the upper deck, behind, you know, on the third baseline, and the noise they made, and Carlos is right. The players buy into it. They feel it in it. That just, and it instills them, you know, to keep the energy going, especially as you get late in the season. That fan base and their energy in the ballpark revitalizes you. When you start to get fatigued at the end of the year, you step on that field and you hear those roars, man, that energy comes back. So that fan base is a huge part of winning and what you're trying to establish late in the season.
Yeah, the orange, the Seven Line Army. That's pretty special. That's pretty cool. Yeah. I think we were playing the Cubs this year, and they showed up one day, and we could see it, and we could feel it, you know, like, holy cow, you know, like, so it is, you know, it's a special times.
Yeah, it is an incredible fan base, and I've been a Mets fan since 1966. I was telling Terry before we came on the air that I remember where I was 55 years ago today. It was July 30th, 1969. It was at Shea Stadium. I was a paper boy, and we had an outing at Shea Stadium, see the Mets against the Houston Astros in a doubleheader, and the Mets lost 16-3 and 11-5. and they fell several games behind the Chicago Cubs, but then they caught fire, and at the end of the year, they won the division by 8 games, and they won the World Series for the first time, and it was nothing like it, but I go way back, so I understand, and every time I see a team as special as this one and the teams that Terry had, for Met fans, it's just kind of like, it's like exhilarating for us to experience it. I'm having a great time watching it.
We need them to be positive. Believe.
Positive always. You have to be. You have to be. There's nothing. No one knows what's going to happen year to year, right?
That's right.
So you got to get on that train and enjoy the ride when you see something like this, and it creates lifelong memories, is what it does.
That's right.
So I want to go back to the beginnings with you. I want you to describe your journey, Carlos, from professional player to Major League Baseball manager. Did you ever envision being a manager in the major leagues as you were going through the system and being a minor league player? Was that ever in your thought process of becoming a manager someday?
Not till towards the end of my career. You know, when I signed, I was 16 years old out of Venezuela, right? Finished high school, San Francisco Giants signed me, and here I was in a different country, different culture, you know. It was hard. It was hard. But no, I mean, once you become a baseball player, your dream is to play in the big leagues. And I didn't have that opportunity. You know, I wasn't a good hitter. I could pick it, but it was hard, you know. So spent a lot of years in the minor leagues. And, you know, towards the end of my career when I was with the Yankees, a lot of the people, because I wasn't an everyday guy anymore. I was, you know, a bench player, the last guy on the roster. And I started helping a lot of the players. I was the veteran, you know, even when I was in Double-A, Triple-A. Again, I had a lot of years in the minor leagues. So I knew what I was at that point. And then a lot of the coaches and coordinators started asking me, hey, would you consider a coaching career when your playing career is over? I was like, I'm not sure. Like, I never envisioned that. But then, you know, it kind of made me start thinking about it. And then I had the support with my family. And when they finally told me, it's like, hey, we want to bring you back as a player for the first half. But then we would like for you to start your coaching career in 2009 in Staten Island. It used to be the short season team for the Yankees. And, you know, I was like, let me think about it. Talk to my family. It was a hard decision, but something that, you know, obviously I'm not going to regret. But I'm glad it worked out well. Knock on wood. Yeah, that's how it pretty much it went down. And then I started coaching. You know, I went from being the fourth coach, first base coach. I did infield, base running, bunting. I was an assistant hitting coach because I was in the cages flipping balls my first couple of years. So I did a lot before I became a manager at the lower levels and then, you know, managed for a couple of years. And I became an infield coordinator, then a field coordinator until I finally, you know, after I managed for a couple of years, I was like, all right, the goal, I didn't make it to the big leagues as a player. I want to get to the big leagues as a coach. So, you know, but the whole time my mindset was be the best version of yourself. Like if you're the infield coach, I wanted to be the best infield coach at the time. If I was a base running coach, a bunting, I wanted to be the best coach in my area in, you know, in that particular time. So I, you know, started moving up the ladder and, you know, I finally got the opportunity to become a big league coach. I remember that call from Brian Cashman when, you know, he's kind of like, I never got that call as a player. You're going to the big leagues, but I got pretty similar to be a coach. And that was like a dream come true. I became a big league coach for Aaron Boone. I became the quality control for the first time. And I didn't know at the time what the quality control was supposed to do.
You know? I don't know what it is today.
Exactly, you know. And worked with the infielders. And then 2-3 years later, I was his bench coach. And, you know, every stop along the way prepared me to be in this chair where I'm sitting right now. And I'm very blessed. I had a lot of great people around me that taught me, that was right there with me, and I continue to lean on those guys, and I continue to learn from those guys.
And you became a pretty hot commodity during the offseason. You had several discussions with several teams before being named the Mets manager. Describe that offseason, the interview process, and the offer to become the Mets manager. What stood out to you about the Mets, which made it your destination beginning your managerial career?
Yeah, it was an interesting offseason, you know, because, you know, it came out, obviously. But I talked to a few teams. I was in the middle of the interview process with a lot of them. A couple of them got deep, and the Mets was one of them. And then finally, I remember being at home on a Sunday night when I finally got that call from Davey Stearns. Wow, dream come true. I couldn't believe it. I was right next to my wife and my two kids. They started crying right away. It was a pretty special. But what stuck out to me was we connected right away. Me and Davey Stearns connected from since the first conversation. And the biggest thing is, you know, we care about people, the human side of things. Nowadays, you know, there's a lot of information in this and that. But at the end of the day, it comes down to human playing the game of baseball. And like I said, after talking to him, I came away like, wow, this guy is not only smart, but he cares about people. And then on top of that, you got an owner on Steve Cohen and Alex Cohen that, you know that resources are going to be there, that they want to be this organization, a first-class organization, who, by the way, they do it right. We do it right. People wants to be a Met. And I was like, this is a great fit here. And I was just glad that I got that opportunity, and what an honor to put in the uniform and to do it for the first time at this level for this organization. It's been a blessing.
Well, it's been a great, you know, it's been a great season so far, and as your rookie manager season. But you also had the decision process of selecting coaches, and why did you choose the support staff? What qualities did they have as you were bringing in the bench coach, for example, and the others? So, talk us through that process a little bit.
Yeah, look, we were looking for a lot of different qualities for a lot of different positions. In this case, the bench coach position, right away, I told David, I want someone with experience. You know, I'm going in as a first-time manager. I'm going to need someone right next to me that's done it before. Not only done it, but done it for a long time, that's got a really good reputation, and that cares about people. And John Gibbons' name came up. And I'm telling you, as soon as we got on the phone, it was kind of like the same way I felt with David when I was going through my interview process. We connected right away. I got off the phone and I called David. I was like, this is a guy I want. So I'm hoping that you can connect with him too, because this guy is what we're looking for. And sure enough, you know, we put Gibby through the interview process. He talked to a lot of the people, and I'm glad that we were able to get him on board. And same thing, with a lot of the coaching staff, you know, third base coach, and some of the qualities that we were looking for there. I wanted experience there as well. And Mike Sarbaugh names came up. He was Tito Francona's third base coach for, I don't know, 12, 13 years with the Guardians. And you know, some of the coaches that they were already here on the staff, you know, talking to them. And a lot of different qualities. And I'm telling you, man, I'm very proud to have the opportunity to come to the ballpark and work with these guys day in and day out.
Well, Gibby is certainly somebody that's near to dear to me. We were roommates in the minor leagues in 1981, known him 43 years. We did the podcast together. So right. Seeing him next to you every game is really, really cool for me personally. But you give Gibby my best. I'm going to turn it over to Terry right now. Thanks, Carlos.
Well, Carlos, we're going to move along here, because I know how busy he is at this particular time of day. There are things that go on that the man is, that he starts to prepare for, because I know the players are going to start filing in that clubhouse here within the hour. So, I just really appreciate you coming on, Carlos. I'm rooting for you. Obviously, I think you've done an absolutely brilliant job, and you're going to continue to do a great job. You got a great feel for people. You got a good club. You got a good lineup. You got a great general manager. The owner's off the charts. You got a lot of positive things going, man, and I just wish you the best moving forward. And I know we got some fan, and that's what the game is about, you know, playing this game so that the fans can stay excited. And so we're going to take some questions from the fans, and then we'll wrap this up so you can get back to business.
Let's do it.
All righty. Fan question number one from our Instagram account. This is from Just Levine, 665. What is the one thing you learned from Aaron Boone during your time as the Yankees bench coach, and how do you implement that in your day-to-day managing of the New York Mets?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I learned from him was just to be consistent with your personality. You got to be who you are every day. It doesn't matter how well you're playing or how bad you're playing. You could be going on a 10-game winning streak, or you could be going on a 10-game losing streak. You got to be the same, because the players, the coaches, everybody's going to feed off that. And he's been really, really consistent throughout the years. And that's the biggest thing that I learned from him. And he cares about people.
All righty. Next question, also from Instagram, comes from Tom Zemensky. Tom asks, is it rare to have a very young catcher like Alvarez come in and make an immediate and discernible positive impact on a veteran pitching staff? And what is it about Alvarez that you think has helped him do this?
Yeah, I don't think it's you see that too often, you know, especially nowadays when there's so much information and there's so much that those catchers go through it every day. He's special, man. He's a special kid. His leadership ability, his ability to guide and lead a pitching staff, and how much he cares, how invested he is in the conviction and his ability to make adjustments, because that's important too. You're going to put together a game plan, but then once the game starts, you have to make adjustment, and he's got that, and he makes those pitchers feel really good about themselves, even on nights where they don't have it or when they're not feeling at their best. He finds a way to get those guys through it. He's been huge. He's only 22, and he's only going to continue to get better.
Final fan question from our X account. This comes from Leo Kennedy. Has there been a particular game or series this season that has stood out so far for you?
Wow. I mean, every series is different. Every game, obviously. I don't know. Probably the most recent one, the one in Yankee Stadium, I think. You know, going over there and us being able to win two games. And I think that, you know, the last inning when we were up 3-2 and Judge was at the plate, and for us to get the last three outs there, that was a huge series for us.
And it was the first sweep of a Subway Series since, Terry, you were at the helm in 2013. So here you go, the two sweeps of the Yankees in the history of the Subway Series. We got the two skippers right here with us. This has been great, Carlos. Thank you. I'll turn it over to Terry. It's been a pleasure, man.
Carlos, listen, it's been absolutely a pleasure. I've enjoyed any time we've had an opportunity to talk and visit. And, you know, I'll be there. You don't need me much. You've got a lot of good help.
And I need you.
You've got good, great coaches. You got great mentors. But you just understand that there's a lot of us, be it Bobby V, be it me, who have managed the Mets, who know what you're going through. And we're sitting there to support you and let you know you've done a great job. So continue. Have a great finish to your year. And I know things are going to work out for you in the end.
Amen. Appreciate you, TC. It's always an honor, and I'll be calling you for tips.
Okay.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Thanks, Carlos.
Thank you so much. Terry, that was so cool seeing you and Carlos together on this week's show, and he's off to a great start as the Mets skipper.
Yeah, you know, he showed you on the interview, John, his patience. You got to have patience to manage in the major leagues. He's got patience. He's got a great personality. He believes in people. He believes in himself. And that spreads, goes through that locker room in volumes. I mean, he's got some good leadership in the clubhouse, but he's done a good job. And I mean, you know, not every decision you make is going to work out. But the one thing I've been most impressed with throughout the first 100 games that he's managed is his accountability. Hey, stands by the decisions he made. There's a reason he made them. And, you know, once in a while, it's got to get, you know, the player's got to get it done for you. Or it looks, you know, but he's handled it very, very well, and I've been very impressed.
Yeah, the chemistry and everything that's going right for the New York Mets right now. We hope it continues, but it has been an exciting season. So thank you for bringing Carlos on with us today. And now it's time for the Tunnel to Towers Amazing Hero of the Week. 9/11 is more than a day in history. It's a day that is still taking lives. More first responders have died since that day from their illness than on 9/11 itself. Yet only two states in the country have kindergarten through 12th grade mandates requiring teaching in each grade about America's darkest day. A whole generation of kids know little to nothing about that day. The Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute is righting this wrong by helping teachers educate kids in grades K through 12 with nonfiction resources, full curriculum units with scripted social studies lessons, activities, and backgrounds for teachers, nonfiction first-person accounts told through videos, and the Discovering Heroes book series, a speaker's bureau for classrooms in addition to a mobile exhibit, a tractor trailer that's an interactive museum with 9/11 artifacts, and Russell F. Siller's Memorial Scholarships for the Children of Program Recipients. To never forget, we must educate future generations, help our nation keep its vow. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. And now we debut a new story from a former Mets reliever and member of their Hall of Fame. Over the Memorial Day weekend in May, we shot this piece at the World Trade Center in New York, and today we get a chance to debut it. Let's go to this week's Amazing Hero of the Week, New York Mets Hall of Famer, John Franco.
How's it going,
John?
Lenny, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you guys. Hi, I'm former pitcher John Franco, the New York Mets. Let's go, Mets, and let's help the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. On 9/11, the team was in Pittsburgh. A plane hit the World Trade Center. I immediately called home, and as I was on the phone with my wife, the sort of second plane hit. Born and raised here. You know, this is my home. It's like a punch in the stomach. When I talk about it now, the hair stands up in my arms. I think about, obviously, the people who weren't firemen and policemen who went to work that day just to put food on the table for their families. think about the firemen who, you know, who went into that building. You know, you can't forget them.
This is the street sign. This is the door from the engine.
Coming down here, the ground zero. We weren't sure if it was the right thing to do, but we wanted to help any way we can. But then when we got down here and we saw the firemen and the rescue workers, you know, with all the soot on their face and sitting down, resting, and you could see how exhausted and sad they were. When there's a building on fire, most people are running out. These guys are running in. And for us to bring a t-shirt or a hat to them, you know, they saw us, they smiled, they thanked us for coming down. You know, made them forget for what they were doing just for a second. It made us feel good about that. We put a small band-aid on a big wound.
They fought for us, they sacrificed.
I know Frank Stiller, who started this Tunnel to Tower, and what they're doing around the country is an amazing job. I take my hat off because they are giving back. Their brother is a true hero. You know, he was in Brooklyn, ran through the tunnel with his gear on. I mean, what more could you say? There's a reason why people from all over the world, all over the country, come here to see that great tribute to all the fallen heroes and all the souls that were lost in the World Trade Center. Those two holes in the ground mean a lot to this country.
By giving $11 a month, you're joining us on our mission to do good. Go to t2t.org to make a positive impact.
We'll have another amazing hero on next week's program. And Terry, before we close the show, we want to announce that this week we've been partnering with the Metcast X account, and we're giving away an autographed Old Timers Day ball signed by you. All you got to do is go to at Metcast on X and then follow them and the Terry Collins Show. Repost the announcement. A winner is going to be chosen on July 31st. You can follow Terry on X and Instagram at @TerryCollins_10. And for those of you on Facebook, follow Terry there at the Terry Collins Show. You could follow me on X and Instagram at John Arezzi. Make sure to subscribe now to the Terry Collins Show wherever you listen to your favorite podcast and on YouTube. Until next time, this is John Arezzi for Terry Collins. Have a great week, everyone.